This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello and welcome to the jurisdiction subgroup meeting number 17 on January 20th, 2017 at 1900 UTC. Apologies that this is Friday night or even Saturday morning for a number of our participants, but this there are only so many slots available, and this week was a challenging week in terms of slots, and here we are. In any event, let's first ask if anybody has any changes to their statements of interest. We have a very stable bunch, at least in terms of their interests. I'll also ask if anybody is on audio only. It appears not. I see that Caboose is actually not on audio. It's been disconnected and is being redialed. So hopefully we'll have Caboose back very shortly. But we might as well get into the first item on our agenda, which is now that we have the questionnaire in final form, what do we do next? So where it should be published, how it should be published, how it should be announced, any thoughts about alternative formats other than having it just laid out on a website and having it people respond in PDFs or emails. So there has been some exchange on the list. Based on the list, I would say that there was no real support for having it done in any kind of survey or fill out the box type of form, and that whatever method we use for publishing the survey, that we should expect responses to come back in emails and in Word documents and PDFs and whatever, and probably to be sent into an email address. So that would be the format for that. Then there's the question of where it should be published and where it should be announced. There were a few different opinions, and I didn't get a final sense on that point, but we might as well continue the discussion here, and I see a hand from Caboose.
Hello, Greg. Hello, everybody. Greg, I am very concerned, seriously concerned, about your behavior with respect to the question raised by Farzana. This morning, you sent us a long statement quoting something from Winston Churchill and then from Joe Biden, saying that we should be brief and on the point. In respect to the Farzana question, you wrote a long passage starting giving your own views. I totally disagree with that. You are not judge, and you have no right to judge on something, on anything at all. Nor the culture are judged. You could ask their views, they could get the views, and it is up to the people raising the question, including me, to say, we agree or we disagree. I don't understand. On one hand, you advise us to be brief. On the other hand, you start to write pages. I don't want to open another allegations of your colleagues, another accusation of your colleagues, another insultation of your colleagues, private sector, but I disagree with you. The Farzana question needs to be answered. The answer is that if someone in reply to the questioner has a point to make, which is in the general substance of the question, but it is not in the letter of the question, that is valid. And I don't agree with your statement. I don't give you any right to come in and dominate us and guide us. Please kindly be totally neutral. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Cavus. I thought the question had been asked to me and then referred to the co-chairs for them to answer as well. So I'm a little surprised at your statement that somehow I wasn't supposed to answer it. This answer was sent out only after consultation and agreement with the co-chairs. It's not my idea alone, and I thought you were waiting for us to respond. You may disagree with the answer, but I expected that we were at least we were responding in good faith, and it's not just me, it's the co-chairs as well. So that should be taken into account. And in terms of order and in terms of maintaining the scope of the work that we do, that does fall squarely into the rapporteur's bailiwick. I feel that that's true. Now, we can discuss this further and see if there are other opinions, but that was the opinion of the co-chairs and myself. So, in terms of brevity, I thought that this was actually relatively short and to the point. Brevity is all relative, and I'll stop there for that purpose. Christopher Wilkinson has his hand up, and then you're next after that. Christopher?
Unmuted. Yeah, good evening, everybody. I've been driving around the country most of today, so I've missed a lot of stuff which may have transpired meanwhile. Just to recall that I sent a few suggestions to the list in reverse order. First of all, the questionnaire really needs to be translated into the ICANN working languages. We want to address these questions to a very wide range of people and institutions and companies worldwide. Secondly, we need to be able to reach directly a wide number of ICANN participants broadly defined. I don't know off the cuff how best that should be done. I think the ICANN staff would give us some advice and information on that, and I referred to the precedent experience of inquiries and collection of statistics which was conducted by the Competition and Consumer Trust projects last year, and I think there must be some good databases of addresses in that context. As to the exact way in which the survey is presented and answers are received, I have no strong opinion. I think there are others who have more experience with this than I have, so I would stand advised. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. I think those are all both good suggestions. I think we can ask staff to have the questionnaire, which is not too long, translated. We'll need to find out how long translations will take. So we'll see what ICANN's capacity is to do that translation. Otherwise, we might need to consider how to deal with that. Farzi raises a good point that we may receive answers in six languages, and then we'll need to translate them back. I guess that, in a sense, is the, we might have to turn to ICANN staff for that again, to the extent that we don't have native speakers in this group who would, or otherwise fluent speakers who would be willing to translate back for them. In any case, let's see, we have DeVos's hand is up again.
Yes, I think the question was raised to the co-chair. You said that it is outside your mandate, outside the mandate of this group. So I don't think that we should discuss it at this group. And the question is before the co-chair, and co-chair are respectfully requested to formally reply to the question raised, but not through you. They have emails, and they could put it on the CCWG, the reply to the questions. And now, coming to the David, I think David says that's abstract. Dear David, it is not abstract. You take it as abstract, but it is a reality. It is a fact. I don't think it is abstract. And you said that let's leave it until the answer comes. The answers come to you and your colleagues that objecting to that. You are a mobilized people, and as soon as any answer comes that you don't like it, you disregard it totally. And I cannot compete with you. I am one or two, that's all. You are a group of people, organized, orchestrated, and so on and so forth. I'm very sorry. This is not this group to discuss the matter. The question is very valid, and any people could comment on anything related to the substance of the question, but not to the letter of the question. And it is not up this group, you and your colleagues, to reject it, or so on and so forth. I'm very, very sorry. This is important for some countries, and you have to reflect that. And I apologize, and I am not in agreement with the co-chair that we communicate with the group through the chairman of the subgroup. They have been asked a question, and they have to directly put the answer on the CCWG mailing list. Then I have the right to agree or not agree in that at ICANN meeting 58 in Copenhagen. Thank you.
Well, Caboose, this answer was endorsed by the co-chairs, and the method of responding was endorsed by the co-chairs. I suggest you ask the co-chairs to handle it differently if you disagree with their decision and mine. So I appreciate that. And I think all that David was saying was that it's hard to answer a question about how we will handle answers without having any answers in front of us. That's what's abstract. In this situation, whatever we might anticipate, we don't know what we will actually find once the responses are in. Cheryl?
Thank you, Cheryl. And off the record, I thought I might respond to the questions we were dealing with in the agenda at this time. And specifically, it would be my pleasure. And specifically, as someone who has, I dare declare, even though I don't even speak English, I speak Australian. I have extensive experience within the world of ICANN and actually, believe it or not, beyond in the multilingual approaches to things. I think if we just ask that when the organisation is being done for the translation of the survey question documents into the and remember, we can use six UN languages, and in the world of at large, we also occasionally choose a couple of others. Language Services, as ICANN, is a highly professional, excellent, and very efficient team. So if you wish, you could have six UN languages in Portuguese or some such combination. But we can also arrange to have very prompt and efficient reverse back from a language in, given to us in answer done by that expert team. So in my view, yes, there are some small, and it should be relatively small in the scheme of things, cost issues, but compared to, and I'm not picking on you, Greg, the cost of a lawyer per hour. We're not going to be breaking the bank on using like ICANN internal language services for the purpose that they have grown and evolved to be a very professional unit for. So I would just be going that way, and by the time our group sees the responses that come in another language, we should have original in other language and the translation thereof, so native speakers within our group can do their own diligence checking. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. I think that makes sense. I will say that the price of this lawyer at this time for this call is zero, so it is, at this point, I'm a good deal, but I agree that there will be some small costs with language service, but I think it's money well spent. The intent here is to distribute this widely and with as few barriers as possible, and I think that that translation comports with that desire. In terms of where to publish this, I see Bernie actually has a hand up.
Thank you, Greg. Just a quick note. Expense requests have to go through the co-chair, so if the subgroup is agreeing that translation is required, I'm not seeing this as a huge cost, but just to follow procedure, if as a rapporteur you could send in the request to the co-chairs, they'll approve it and we'll get on with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Appreciate that. Definitely protocol for everything. I see Farzi asks, can we translate these questions into a language that is not a UN language? And I guess the answer to that is if we, as Cheryl noted, at large sometimes translates into additional languages or has additional languages translated. You know, we could translate into as many languages certainly as the language service translates into. And if there is anybody here who wants to undertake a translation into another language, then, you know, we can have that as well. There's certainly no reason not to, assuming obviously all the translations have to be faithful and have to be understandable to the recipients. So, you know, if there are specific other languages, but I think that, you know, going to the six languages that I can use is our baseline. There. Anything else on the publishing and announcing of the questionnaire? I think the other question was where it should be published in the ICANN site. There are a couple of different suggestions. One was to publish it as if it were a public comment, although it is not a public comment, but to publish it on a page that is linked to the public comment page where all the public comments are announced and to have it announced on that public comment page. Another suggestion, which was my suggestion, at least as a straw man, was to have it published on the homepage of the accountability section of the ICANN website, or at least to have it announced there and to be on a page that's part of the accountability section of the website and not the public comment page. And a third suggestion was that we have have it on the subgroup's wiki and have that linked. So those are the alternatives. So any thoughts on those? Caboose?
Yes, Greg, two things. First, please kindly reply to the statement I made in the chat that you are kindly requested to ask the co-chair to formally reply. I don't think that we need to have a reply to you, and that is, they should be signed by one of the co-chair on behalf of the other, because we need that text for further action, number one. Number two, with respect to the publishing, I have no problem. Six languages, okay. If there is any other language, In addition to that, I have no problem. I don't speak any other language than those six. However, with respect to the timing of the deadline, as I mentioned several times, for some SO and AC, it would be difficult without having a physical meeting to further discuss and debate the issue to reply answer. For the GAC, the meeting would be in Copenhagen to up to 16 of the March. Therefore, there should be 1 month minimum after that date. We should not rush. This is an important question for government. There's a public policy issue involving that, and we should not rush. I know that the government do not have the same facility as the private sector. They don't have such support. They don't have such legal support and so on so forth. They have difficulties, deficiencies, problems. So please kindly do not deprive them. So 1 month after the...
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
Excuse me, I don't understand. What can I do?
Keep going, Caboose. That's just keep going, Caboose. It's Cheryl here. It's just a system message. Keep going.
Do you hear me, correct?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. 1 month after the ICANN meeting in Copenhagen for reply, but not less than that, please, kindly. Do not deprive some constituency not to have any opportunity to answer. Thank you very much. And I don't want anyone to come and intervene when I'm speaking. It is not good. It is not friendly. I don't need any intervention of anybody. We don't need any such advisor. You are the chair, and you are the only one you can intervene. I don't understand that distinguished person who intervened in my intervention. Thank you.
Okay, Caboose. Thank you. That was responding. Let's take your things in order. I had asked that you make the request of the co-chairs. I don't think it's my place to make that request. So if you could do that, that would be appreciated. With regard to the time period, that's number three on the agenda. We're still on number two, but your suggestion that it be 30 days after Copenhagen is noted. Third, the voice that came on is a recording that happens when the staff member who is designated as the host of the call either logs off or puts the call on hold, and that's an automated recorded message, not an actual human being. So those are the three. So in terms of anyway, Caboose, the question, Farzi's question was answered by me and the co-chairs in the way that we chose to answer it. So I think anything further you should take up with the co-chairs. We can discuss this further in AOB. So in terms of the submission of answers, I see Farzi's question in the chat. We had agreed on 60 days, but the concern was if we did 60 days, that it might come too close to the end of the Copenhagen meeting to allow for answers to be finalized after the meeting. And perhaps, you know, in particular the case of the GAC, which, you know, does most of its work at the ICANN meeting to formulate an answer, although I don't see that there is any answer that this questionnaire is asking for anything from the GAC or from any SO or AC. Actually, it's asking for factual circumstances that, except for question three, occurred to the respondent specifically. So I think the concern about SO and AC responses may be misplaced. I recall a couple of other, at least one other GAC member suggesting that 2 weeks after the end of Copenhagen would be sufficient in any event. I think first we have to see about the translation and how long that will take, and we need to decide if translation is going to take more than a very short period of time, do we want to put the questionnaire up in English first and then have the translations appear afterwards. We can cross that bridge when we come to it, but that has been the case in the past. Of course, we would still need to hold the questionnaires open to allow for enough time after the translations. That's the question there. So any other thoughts on where this should be published, any of the, you know, alternatives that were offered up? And before we move to timing completely, I don't want to just make this up myself. We can certainly continue to deal with it on the list. I would say that there were some arguments that, the, practically speaking, the best place to put it was to have it announced on the public comment page, and then to have it that short announcement that appears on the public comment page, among all the other public comments, would link to a page where the questionnaire is. We don't have to have the rest of the things that accompany a public comment on that page. It's a lot of other text that's prepared around an actual public comment. We won't need that. But we should at least have it announced on the public comment page, because that's the place where we've all been trained to look for things to comment on. And the general public, probably, if they look anywhere, would probably look there as well. There are a number of other places where comments actually do come up, and there's a reference to those operational consultations on the public comment page. But those are more obscure. I think that I would suggest that publishing the short, the announcement of it on the public comment page is, practically speaking, the thing to do. But if there are objections to that, I'd like to know. I mean, I quasi-object, based entirely on the formalistic fact that the public comment page is supposed to be for comments on proposals and outputs of the community. But form over substance is not always the right way to go. So that's what I would say. And then I see Christopher has said, I have seen precedent for publishing English first and other languages shortly afterwards, as and when translations are available. And I think that makes sense as well. We might as well get the ball rolling. And I think we should see what our actual publication date is likely to be, and we can make a final decision on timing. But let's turn to number three, time period for responses to the questionnaire, and see if there are any other comments from Cavus, who I see has now said the deadline should be 39 days after the ICANN meeting in Copenhagen.
30 days.
Okay. I guess the 9 and the 0 are next to each other on the keyboard, so 30 days. Okay. Any other thoughts on that, whether it should be shorter, longer, doesn't matter? I'm keeping the microphone open for somebody to talk. We have people on this call who are often full of opinions, and yet we have not heard from them. So the question is, you know, whether we need to wait a full 30 days after Copenhagen, which would put this into mid-April, or whether some shorter period of time is just as appropriate and will get us moving on to our next item faster. Now, as long as it's at least the 60 days that was agreed and suggested by our co-chair. I think the 60 days is basically the shortest we'll take, and the question is whether to extend that 60 days further based on the distance of that date from Copenhagen. David McCauley.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley for the transcript. My suggestion would be we come up with a number of days that we think it should be posted and use that number of days from the posting rather than have it a number of days following a certain date on the calendar like the end of ICANN 58. Just because we don't know when we're going to post it and we don't know how long translations will take. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Phil Cohen.
Yes, Greg. I don't have a set position on this other than we should, giving fair opportunity for translation and informed comment, we should try to be as expeditious as possible. I'm just concerned we've got a situation where it took seven sessions to agree on four questions, and now we're talking about leaving a comment period open till we're here in mid-January and talking about a comment period that doesn't close till mid-April, which is 3 months away before we even have answers to these questions to look at. And that concerns me somewhat in terms of getting this work, the work of this group done in a reasonably expeditious manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. So that is quite a ways away. Now, obviously, there is other work that we can and should be doing while awaiting the questionnaire. Caboose?
Yes, Greg. I think it took us many weeks, to draft the questions or to prepare questionnaires. Why we hurry up and do not allow the people to have sufficient time, reasonably sufficient time to reply? And I mentioned that for some group of the ICANN constituency, before having any physical meeting, it would be absolutely difficult to answer. For some, it is okay, but some others is not. Gagging is one of those. Many questions, many issues, we discuss it physically, then we reply to that more easily. So please kindly, and also someone else, Jorge also agreed with that or supported that the issue, we should have sufficient time after return from Copenhagen to reply to that. Unless you want to exclude one SO or several SO or SAC to reply. If that is the purpose, that is another issue. Thank you.
Caruso, let me ask you a question. Which of the questions do you expect would be answered by the GAC, or are you just talking about answers that might come from individual GAC members?
No. In the GAC, there are very, very few people who are participating in your group. We have some internal messages. Some people say that they don't have at the level of the ministry any expert to investigate the situation, so they have to consult other ministries. However, if in the GAC physical meeting, with the help of others, and presumably you will also come to that meeting, we explain the situation and GAC people put some time to discuss, argue, debate that, perhaps they would be in a position to properly reply to the question. So what I said is 30 days after end of the GAC meeting in Copenhagen. Thank you.
My question was that I did not expect, I don't see questions on here that I would think would be answered by any SO or AC. So I was asking which of the questions, and if we want we can put the questions up, would actually be answered by an SO or AC.
Sorry, you misunderstood me. Individual respondents, but based on the discussions in GAC meeting that we transfer the information to all countries and so on and so forth, and individuals private sector in those countries, whatever constituency, then based on that explanation, they would reply to the questions. Not all of them or many of them or some of them read your documents and they are not familiar. And if you want, I can transfer to you some of the reply received that there is no expertise in the government to reply to those questions. So they need a debate. They need analysis. They need explanation. They need examination. They need something and perhaps with the help of the people in the GAG, your people or others or you know, whoever comes, we will discuss and then we will have something in the communique and an annex to that that will guide the individuals, but not GAG. I don't think that GAG would reply to your question. Individual countries, individual participants, individual persons reply to that question and they need time, and that time will be 30 days after the Copenhagen meeting. Thank you.
Okay, I think I understand now that you're expecting that some GAC members may wish to respond but would not feel capable of responding until after the Copenhagen meeting and after they essentially get some learning and guidance in the course of the Copenhagen meeting that would allow them to respond. I guess that is a possible turn of events. Cheryl, I think you had your hand up.
I did, Greg. Thanks for noting that. And I did put it back down again, but I'll grab it now you've noted me. Cheryl Langdon, for the record. The reason I had my hand up while Cavus was saying that is it is a situation he's outlining which I understand very well and is not limited to how close an attention the GAC representatives in some cases are paying to this even. I work along with a number of other people within country very closely with our GAC representatives, and quite often it is their reporting coming back from a meeting which allows things to get on a wider departmental agenda. And so to that end, allowing a period of time, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn how much, as long as it's sufficient, be it, you know, however many days, as long as it's enough days, for them to have their deliberations, their directions, and get back to us. Remembering, of course, that these people, when they work within department, and not all of our GAC representatives too, do, of course, those who are effectively outside actual government may need necessarily to take longer or have different mechanisms to get an actual government input into their responses. But there is a given period of time, which obviously would be smart if we allowed for. Now, of course, we can also allow for the fact that if, you know, GAC member X from country Y says, I need another 14 days, we could do so. Thanks.
Thank you, Cheryl. I think in terms of the calendar, we're looking at, if we were to put this out, let's say, the middle of next week, but not necessarily get translations done for a few days, essentially from the time translations came out, might be the beginning of the following week, which is essentially February, almost February 1st, January 27th. So that would take us on a 60-day calendar to roughly March 29th, February being a short month. And 30 days after Copenhagen takes us to Friday, February 13th. So we're really only talking about 2 weeks here. Certainly people are capable of submitting things early, and we can start dealing with them early, and we can encourage people to submit them earlier if they can. But I don't see any huge downside in having it open till the 13th. So that's kind of my thinking on this. But if anybody has any other thoughts, on that, you know, the difference between, say, essentially April 1st and April 13th, give or take, then I think we can certainly err a little bit on the side of keeping it open longer, but again, you know, recognizing what Phil is saying, encourage people to respond sooner if they can, and we can begin our deliberations sooner if we do, because we are looking at first, you know, discrete instances. We'll have and we can begin to compile them. So anything else? What I'd like to see what people want. But Cavus, your hand is up.
Yes, you mentioned quite rightly, you put in the covering letter, answers are expected within 30 days. That means those who reply early, they are most welcome. But 30 days would be for those who cannot reply less than that. So within 30 days, it is something more legally we put in all text that requires action. So it is just a matter of proper wording. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. I'd just like to see some green ticks for an April 13th closing date for the questionnaire, and red X's for those who think that's too long. If it's too short, you can put up a turtle. I see one green check, and I see no, and I see one red X, and no turtles, and two red X's. Just so we have opinions registered, let's take down the X's and checks. See what people think of the date 2 weeks after the end of the meeting in Copenhagen, which essentially would be April 1st, or if we extend it through the weekend, April the third. If you think this is the appropriate date, please put up a green check. And if you object to this date, put up a red X. And remember, if you have a hand up, I can't see your check or X. Now we have three green checks and agreeing that the April the 3rd rather than the 13th should be the date, and one red X, two red X's saying the date is too short. If anybody thinks the date is too long, they can put up a rabbit. Seeing no animals, seeing, I think, another. So I have three checks and two X's there. I think it's, you know, not quite dispositive. We can put this up on the list. I think the other thing to note is that typically these deadlines are not hard deadlines in terms of submissions to public comment periods. If they get in a day or two or three late, they are considered just as fully as if they come in on time. It's really only when they miss the window of opportunity for getting put into any kind of an analysis system or report or meetings that they really become too late. And I will note that the IPC response to the SOAC subgroup questionnaire is several weeks late, and is being submitted today or over the weekend. Being on the SOAC subgroup as well as this one, I know that it's going to be too late if we don't get it in now. So we can either say the third and with the understanding that we're not going to cut off late responses, or say the 13th and really try to discourage late responses, because at that point it's getting kind of ridiculous to get responses in late April. So why don't we take this to the list, since I don't think we have a really dispositive answer here. Caboose, your hand is up.
No, sorry, if I was the old hand, sorry.
Okay. So as I said, we'll take this to the list, and why don't we go to number four here on the list of on our agenda. It's been suggested by a couple of participants, including our esteemed co-chair Mathieu, that in our seemingly interminable attempt to finish the document in number five, the influence of ICANN's existing jurisdiction on the resolution of disputes, that it would be a good project, and also a very obviously a concrete and fact-based project for us to review ICANN's history of litigation, or its, you know, past and current litigations, which are all listed and posted on a page with links to the documents there, and we can see there what jurisdictional issues arose. We can get a sense of what kinds of cases these were, what causes of action, such as breach of contract or failure to follow the bylaws or tortious interference with prospective business advantage, or whatever the cause of action might be, who the parties were, what their jurisdiction or home jurisdictions were. We could create a chart, and hopefully we could divide this up. So I'd like some thoughts on whether that, in fact, would be worthwhile. Personally, it seems that they're the facts that are closest at hand. And if we're talking about the effect of ICANN's jurisdiction, one place to look is in actual cases. David.
Greg, thank you. David McCauley again for the transcript. I wondered when I saw the agenda what this item was for, so I appreciate your explanation just now, and if it was explained beforehand on list or in a call, I just missed it. I actually applaud the idea of looking at litigation, because I think as people recognize, I've said this before, I think our remit is fairly narrowly focused on dispute resolution, and so I welcome this step. But I would, before we go off and divide up the work, I would make a suggestion, and that is that we invite somebody from Jones Day to come and make a presentation to us. They're the common thread through much of this. And while I recognize there may be some people who don't particularly trust ICANN's lawyers, I think they are professional, and I would trust them. And I think it would be nice. Maybe they could cut the amount of work we have to do if they gave us a factual presentation of what litigation has taken place, what the outcomes were, what the issues were, that kind of thing. So it might at least be a step along the way that could help us. And not meant to be dispositive, but just an idea that might help us in this respect. Thank you.
Well, I think that's an interesting suggestion, good suggestion. Caboose?
Yes, that is a good suggestion. However, I would like just to, for information of David, mention that in any organization, for any action, for any study, past experience is one of the major elements. And always has been used. Even the court has used the past experience. And it has been mentioned.
I'm sorry, for some reason there, I'm finding it very hard to understand you now. It was fine before.
Yeah. I said that in every organization, in every case of a study, the past experience have a major contribution to the issue. So I don't think that it is any difficulty to go to those past experience. Whether somebody explain that and provide a brief on that, that is something else, or whether we have to go to those issues and discuss them, that is another issue. However, because of the voluminous document, the only thing we need to describe the case and the final decision or assumption of the court. That would provide guidance for us how to proceed. So I support the idea of David, and I support the idea of going to the past practice of the ICANN. That gives us a lot of information and guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Anybody else on this topic? I had a couple of suggestions for what the information collected might be. These came from Mathieu. I'll just read them here and then put them in the chat. One is to identify the various jurisdictions that are involved. So I guess that would be the jurisdiction and venue and choice of law of the actual case, and also the jurisdictions of the parties. Identify which type of issue was brought in front of the jurisdiction. So policy, governance, other, and also I think here the cause of action, the actual tort or other wrong that was alleged to have been committed. And then to collect some data on the percentage of success for ICANN, duration of the process, whether there was interim relief, et cetera, to help assess whether these cases actually had an adverse impact on ICANN. That may be more difficult, although once we, as Caboose suggests, we should certainly record the final outcome, and it'll be easy enough to see what the duration of the process was and to see if there's interim relief, you know, like a preliminary injunction of some sort or temporary restraining order. I think in addition, I would want to record any thing that actually seemed to be a direct effect of jurisdiction, if we could possibly do that. That may require more close reading. That's where David's suggestion may come in handy. As Jones Day might recall, cases where jurisdiction itself or an issue that was quite jurisdiction specific actually was germane to the proceeding. Any other thoughts on this? And anybody who thinks this is a project we should not undertake, or for that matter, this is a project that they couldn't contribute to, we'll need a reasonable sized group of people. There are at least 30 cases or so on the list, some of them longer than others in terms of how many documents there are. So any other comments on how we would get this done? I'm assuming if you're not putting your hand up, you think you can help. Caboose?
Yes, Greg. I don't think that you need to raise that question so on and so forth. You do not provoke or involve the people to object. There has been the question raised. There has been a support for that. One of the co-chairs mentioned that to someone, that one of the best way would be to go to review that. I don't think that while you are asking for objections, you want to narrow it down, you want to negate that, I think. Let us take David and your comments into account and try to have a summary of the case and the summary of the assumption of the court or decision of the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think it's incumbent on me to make sure that the full range of opinions that people hold are brought out, and that if there are no objections, that the question at least be asked, so that there aren't concerns later that people didn't get an opportunity to object, or that they were ganged up or steamrolled or bludgeoned or any of the other colorful phrases that have been used to discuss some of our past deliberations. So, you know, regardless of the past, I think it it behooves me, whether I support or do not support or are neutral, which is my official position, on any of these things, that all positions, including apathy, are adequately represented. David.
Great. Thank you. David McCauley. I'll be brief. I see Bernie's hands up, too. You asked for suggested ways to tackle this. I think my idea, I would put at the top of the list. But after that, when you dive into the lists on ICANN, each document is explained. And I think we, among a smaller group of us, we could say, what do we want to look for first? You know, orders, judgments, appellate briefs tend to have a statement of the case, a statement of the question up front. So we can figure out a list of suggested places to go to first that would give someone a good feel for the case. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I will take that as an action item take from what you say. I think we should assemble a small group to at least kind of handle the work, run the work, and if other people want to join in, you know, that's great. So it can be a big, small group, but you can take volunteers on the list for the small group. If anybody wants to volunteer now, I'm happy to take the volunteers. And then that group can decide exactly what what's being pulled out of each case and find the most efficient method for doing so, maybe one where people other than U.S. lawyers can contribute equally, since it's I don't want this to be seen as something that's only being done by a particular sector of our work. Thank you, David, for volunteering. So we will have a small group that includes David. Just because you volunteered first, you don't have to be the facilitator of the small group. But thank you for volunteering in your ideas. Anybody else? Well, it being 3 o'clock, Caboose, yes.
Yes, I wish to be part of that small group, but unfortunately I cannot do that because I am one hand only. My hand is now injured and operated, so I am one finger typing, so I cannot do anything. But I could participate in that meeting, in that small group. So put me kindly as a part of that small group. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I understood you'll contribute, and I'm sorry about your the situation, and glad that you're at least on the mend. I also see that Avery will contribute to in her meager way, being very modest. I'm sure it won't be meager. So I will. We'll have those names to begin with for the small group: David McCauley, Caboose Araste, and Avery Doria. And we'll take other volunteers on the list. Anyway, now being 3 o'clock, we'll continue dealing with getting number four underway and the questionnaire on the list, and I will put it up on our mailing list, of course. And last, I do encourage everyone to go to the document, the Google Docs that we once again have not gotten to. It's really much more helpful if people spend some time in the document, and I encourage you to go to Section C. If you're going to go spend any time on the document, that's the place where the most time is needed. Phil Corwin has volunteered for the small group as well. So with that, we will adjourn this call, and our next call is next week at some time that I'm not finding right now on my calendar. It's actually coming up quite soon. It's on the 24th at 1300. So until the 24th at 1300, I bid you farewell and have a good weekend and continue a good weekend if you're already in the weekend. This meeting is adjourned, and we can turn off the recording.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, everyone. Bye.